They can be the size of a sesame seed. They have 8 legs, and they have the power to alter the way humans spend their time outdoors. Yes, ticks. Every year, we hope that the cold weather has killed off the ticks, but it doesn't seem to work that way. There are 14 different kinds of these hardy little arachnids in Maine, and they seem to resurface in full force every year. Now that the warmer weather has arrived, it's time to look out for tick bites and the diseases they can bring. Cases of Lyme disease have shot up in Maine in recent years, hitting a record of almost 1,800 cases last year. And now other tick-borne diseases such as anaplasmosis and powassan bring new threats. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We'll learn from the experts about what to look out for and what you can do to reduce your risk of tick bites. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Warning, you may get itchy listening to today's topic. We are talking about ticks, Lyme disease, and other diseases that can be spread by ticks and other vector. What do you want to know about tick bites? How can you spot symptoms of tick-borne diseases? Joining me in our studio, Dr. Rob Smith, director and co-founder of the Vector-Borne Disease Laboratory, as well as director of the Division of Infectious Disease at Maine Medical Center. He was recently named to the U.S. Health and Human Services Tick-Borne Disease Working Group. And Chuck Lubelczyk is a field biologist and all-around tick expert with the Vector-Borne Disease Lab at Maine Med. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about identifying ticks or keeping them out of your yard? Have you gotten Lyme disease or been worried that you might? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Rob, I want to start by just asking you, when we say vector-borne diseases, what do we mean? When I think of a vector, I think of something from a high school geometry class, but this means something else altogether in this context, doesn't it?
That's right. In medicine, when we talk about vector-borne diseases, we're talking about diseases that are carried by usually an arthropod in most cases. So it'd be a mosquito or a tick or a flea, depending on the disease. But there are some other vectors that are invertebrates as well in other groups. Of course, in Maine, primarily when we talk about vector-borne disease, we're talking about tick-borne diseases and, to a lesser extent, the possibility of mosquito-borne
diseases. Sort of West Nile, that kind of thing, mosquitoes, but the Lyme and everything else we're going to be talking about today.
From ticks.
Okay, Chuck, the question of the day. We had such a cold snap starting Christmas time for about 3 weeks. Did it kill the ticks? Any ticks?
No. Sorry. That's a simple answer. It was very snowy, though. So that snow provides a very good insulating blanket for the ticks. And they really like the snow depth that we had this year. Ideally, if we had a few days without any snow at all and really bone-chilling temps, that may have done something. But I think, by and large, they're doing pretty well this spring.
And when you say they're doing pretty well, because you've already been out in the field collecting them, and there are a lot of ticks out there.
There are a lot of ticks. Deer ticks are out. However, the one thing that this year we're noticing is that the number of dog ticks seems to be slightly down. And dog ticks the last couple of years are that very common tick we get in the spring. And the last 2 years, they have been hyper-abundant across the state. We may be on a lower track for them this year. And they're a big nuisance factor. So when people go out and find 40 or 50 ticks on them at one time, they're probably going to be dog ticks in the spring, and those numbers may be down a little bit this year.
Okay, and Rob, we don't need to worry about dog ticks, right? What do we need to worry about?
So dog ticks in Maine don't carry any diseases that we're aware of. And if you're in the southern part of the United States or the central part of the United States, Rocky Mountain spotted fever can be carried by dog ticks, but not here to date. So we have to be worried about deer ticks primarily, and that's the tick that is, their adult ticks are already out and questing in the environment. And as we get to May, June, and July, the little nymphal ticks will be the predominant stage. And then the adults, larvae will be out in August, and then the adults will be back out in the fall, so September, October, November.
And at all these phases, they can transmit Lyme and other diseases?
Well, the nymphal tick and the adult tick can transmit Lyme disease. The larvae are not infected with Lyme disease. Larvae may be able to transmit one of the diseases the tick carries, or maybe two, but not Lyme disease.
Okay. And, you know, I think that the conventional wisdom, the old wisdom, Chuck, was an easy way to tell the difference between a deer tick that might be carrying Lyme is that it's tiny and a dog tick is bigger. But that's not really good advice, is it?
Yeah. The thing to really look for is a bigger tick with white on the back is going to be the real kicker for a dog tick.
Bigger tick, white on the back. Yeah. Don't worry.
Yeah. They're nuisance value, but you know the saying that I was talking to that someone came out with a few weeks ago was that no tick bite is a good tick bite. So just any ticks you get, you know, you obviously want to get them off as soon as you can. But the dog ticks are also tend to be found in open, drier areas. So parklands, grassy areas, dune grass, those kinds of things are really where dog ticks really get going in pretty good numbers.
Where are we tracking deer ticks in Maine? Are they everywhere?
They are still not as abundant in northern Maine, although there's small little outcroppings in Fort Kent and Holton. And then over in the Downeast area, there seems to be populations of them slowly picking up around Eastport, Calais, Machias. But really, as you get into that northwestern kind of industrial forest, Allegash area, there don't seem to be too many of them in the northern part of the state yet.
So pretty much wherever there are people.
Well, that's a lot of it, certainly, you know, because we get a lot of our data from people that are out finding ticks, and of course they're reporting them, usually from their homes. But a lot of it, too, is that we have habitats in those industrial northern forest areas in the Downeast area that may not be as good for the ticks as we see in southern parts of the state. So a lot of disturbed areas, a lot of your deciduous forests, probably more common as you go south of Bangor, so that's going to help the ticks a lot.
Okay, Rob, I have a feeling what I'm going to ask you, your answer is going to scare me, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What are the numbers? How many Lyme cases have there been in Maine in the past year, as well as anaplasmosis and powassan and is it called babesiosis?
Babesiosis. So when we started this work, there was basically one disease we were worried about, and that was Lyme disease that was carried by the ticks. And there were about 1,700 cases, I think, reported this year. Usually in Maine, over the last 5 years or so, it's been over 1,000 cases reported in that range. What's really changed this past year in 2017 was a marked increase in reported cases of anaplasmosis, which is another disease this tick carries that causes fever and headache and actually can be quite a severe disease, particularly in elderly people who get it. I think about a quarter of the cases reported were actually people who ended up in the hospital. Whereas with Lyme disease, it's more like 5% or less of the cases that are reported are actually end up in the hospital. So it can be a serious disease. And that was up tenfold over 5 years ago in terms of reported cases. We think actually some of that may be the availability of a test that's quite good at diagnosing this disease acutely. And so the use of that test much more frequently may account for some of this increase in cases. We've also seen a large increase, although not quite so abrupt, in babesiosis cases. And babesia was actually the first disease associated with this tick in Massachusetts back in the 1970s. And it was called Nantucket fever because it seemed to be a disease of that area of New England. But as time has gone on, we've seen babesiosis appear pretty much anywhere that there is a dense concentration of deer ticks. And those cases went from 50 or so a couple of years ago to, I think, over 100 this year. And that's another disease that in younger people may be asymptomatic or have very mild symptoms. But if you're older or if you're immune compromised or you don't have a spleen, you can get severely ill from that disease quite quickly. And every summer we have several patients in the hospital who are getting, in the intensive care unit, actually are getting treated for babesiosis. So it's not a trivial illness at all. And the list goes on. We have a couple of other diseases that are rarer or that we don't know how to recognize yet. One is something called Borrelia miyamotoi, which is another bacterial disease that kind of acts like anaplasma, but we don't know as much about it. But we do know it's in a few percentage of Maine deer ticks. And finally, we have powassan virus, or also known as deer tick virus, which is fortunately, a rare cause of at least recognized disease in people, although it's in a few percentage of our deer ticks. And that disease can cause a brain infection, which can be fatal. And actually, there was one fatality
case, yeah,
in Maine a few years ago from that.
let me ask you this. I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that many of the symptoms for many of these diseases are symptoms that can be represented with other kinds of illnesses as well. How good is Maine's medical community, the pediatricians, general practitioners around the state in recognizing when a Lyme test or when a Powassan or anaplasmosis test may be needed? Are we able to be getting the information out to medical professionals on the front line as well as we need to?
I think this has become so much part of our daily work in the summertime in many parts of Maine that in general, physicians and other providers who've been practicing in the state for a few years are quite aware of these diseases. Now, some of them we're still learning about. For Miyamotoi, for example, would be rarely looked for, perhaps, and not so frequently diagnosed. But in terms of checking for anaplasma and babesia, I think, as I said, part of the reason we're seeing a rise in cases is that a lot of patients coming in with fever and an undiagnosed illness are getting checked with a tick panel. And on the tick panel will be a test for the DNA of anaplasma, of babesia. It often includes an antibody test for Lyme disease. But there is a pitfall with Lyme disease testing. That is that it's an antibody test. You're not really looking at the organism itself. And those antibodies don't really accumulate for several weeks of infection. So the ability to detect Lyme disease by the test in the first couple of weeks is only 50-50. As time goes on with an untreated infection, it gets becomes a very good test. But in the early Lyme disease, you should not rely on the blood test.
All right. Go ahead, Chuck.
Oh, well, I was just going to throw out that the other thing with Maine, that we have a state vector-borne work group where we have people from our organization, UMaine, the state, some federal agencies, across disciplines. And so with these tick-borne diseases where they also affect pets, including livestock, communication with veterinarians is extremely important. And in some of the cases, we have found that vets are really clued into this, especially in these areas like northern Maine, down east Maine. They frequently are alerted to the presence of ticks and sometimes the diseases before they really become apparent otherwise. Animals seem to be a very good sentinel in this regard. So
Chuck, do ticks serve any positive purpose in the world?
Other than having us come on to talk to you? No, I don't think so. They probably do control. Some ticks do control wildlife species. So the old, the weak, the young, in moose, for instance, are parasitized by a tick we call the winter tick. And those moose that are susceptible will die from it. So there's no overpopulation of moose. One of those factors causing high moose mortalities are this abundance of ticks.
I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to ask. I know it was really in the news a couple of years ago how devastated so many moose have been. I mean, some of the pictures were just really hard to look at. Yeah. Is that still the case or does that seem to have subsided?
My understanding is the numbers of moose that have died this previous winter are down slightly. But the last 2 years, there were quite high mortality events. I think they were talking about in Maine and New Hampshire, somewhere around 50 to 60% of the calves had died as a consequence of winter tick infestations the last 2 years. I think the numbers aren't completely in yet for this past year, however, in either state.
Mm. So I'm going to go to a call before the break because we already have so many coming in. I'm going to go to Bill in Skowhegan. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. What's your question?
To offer up a potential solution for helping to keep ticks off, I own a company with my wife, and we make a line of tick and insect repelling apparel items for dogs and people where we use permethrin-treated fabric. And I was curious what your panel had to say about recommending permethrin-treated fabrics for insect repellency for their patients.
Oh, Chuck, you believe in permethrin, don't you?
My clothing could stand up on its own from the amount of permethrin that's on it. So, yeah, I really douse it pretty heavily. My field clothes get a pretty good workout with it. I have yet to purchase an article of the fabric that comes treated with permethrin. I usually buy the permethrin off the shelf and spray my own clothing. But it is widely used, and a lot of people do like the idea of it as a front line of defense.
All right, Bill, thanks for your call. I'm going to go to Mary Ellen on Facebook. She says, Central Maine has been seeing ticks since the snow started to retreat about 3 weeks ago. They are in the leaves. So be careful as you start to rake and clean up your yards. When it gets hot enough, they'll go back undercover. Is that right, Chuck? They're in the leaves?
They love the leaf litter. It's like the snow in a lot of ways. It provides a nice insulating blanket for the ticks, and that is actually a very good method to help reduce ticks around your property. It might be a little boring to preach it, but raking leaves actually is a fairly effective way of reducing tick habitat.
But while you're doing it, wear that permethrin.
Wear the permethrin.
Or at least some DEET, right?
DEET and also long sleeves. As much as it is warm to wear to wear a long sleeve clothes, that's really a good line of defense as well.
I want to ask you all about the bait boxes that the Centers for Disease Control develop. Can you explain how they work, and do you think they're a good idea?
Yeah, so they are designed to control ticks on rodents. So the primary reservoir for a lot of these tick-borne pathogens are mice, chipmunks, and birds. And these bait boxes are geared primarily towards mice and chipmunks. They come into the bait box, get covered with the same compound that you could maybe treat as a top spot medicine in your dog or cat. They get covered with it, and then it would kill the ticks on them. They do require several per acre. So there is a density of traps or density of bait boxes that you have to place in order to be effective. But around a residential dwelling, they're pretty popular, and they do work very well.
All right, and we're going to post a link to some more information about those, how to build one or how to buy one. We're going to go to David calling from Saco. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. And my question is this. So you get a tick bite. You go to the doctor. He doesn't even do any tests. He just gives you an injection for something. And my question is, does that one injection cover you for that one bite, for multiple bites over the rest of the season, for the rest of your life? How does that work? What's up?
Well, I'm not quite sure what the injection would be. The usual recommendation, if you have a deer tick bite and you remove it within a couple of days of finding the tick, one of the options you can follow is to have one dose of an antibiotic called doxycycline, which has been well studied in preventing Lyme disease, and it lowers the risk 80% or so of getting Lyme disease from that tick you removed. But the percentage in the studies was still only about 3 or 4% of the people who got the bite and didn't get the antibiotic got Lyme disease, and then about 0.5% got it if they got the dose of the antibiotic. So that's the usual, or at least the evidence-based approach that I'm aware of. Otherwise, we really treat symptoms and look, diagnose the diseases and treat symptoms when they appear.
David, thanks for your call. Believe it or not, we already have to take a quick break. We are talking about ticks, other vector-borne diseases, and Lyme disease. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And the Lunder Foundation, founding partner of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical.
President Trump wants to keep most transgender people out of the U.S. military. Nicholas Talbot wants to serve.
My purpose is to put on that uniform and do my job and serve my country. That's what it's all about. It's not about what you look like under that uniform.
As his legal challenge to the ban moves through the courts, he preps for boot camp. A transgender recruit this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us this afternoon from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, David Kurtzer, who won a Pulitzer Prize for The Pope and Mussolini. His new book, The Pope Who Would Be King, is about Pope Pius IX, who became pope in 1846 and ruled over the Papal States. He instituted the doctrine of papal infallibility and saw progress and freedom of speech as anti-Catholic. His exile led to the emergence of modern Italy. Join us.
That's tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, all about ticks and the diseases they cause. Joining me today, two experts from Maine Medical Center's Vector-Borne Disease Laboratory, Chuck Lubelczyk and Dr. Rob Smith. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining me on the line now is Griffin Dill. He's an integrated pest management professional with the University of Maine's Cooperative Extension. Griffin, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, my pleasure, Jennifer.
Tell me what you do at UMaine's Tick Identification Lab.
Yeah, so Chuck's lab and Rob's lab at Maine Medical Center for, correct me if I'm wrong, I think 25 years or so, offered a public service to the people of Maine, providing a tick identification, meaning that anyone could send in, bring in, drop off a tick, and they would tell you exactly what type of tick that was, and it would help, you know, alleviate some concerns in regards to potential for disease transmission and the like. And it also helps to gather a lot of great geographic and abundance information for tick populations here in the state of Maine. And they approached us in 2013 about taking over that program. We do have an insect identification program here that's been run and has handled a handful of ticks over the years. And we were happy to continue that service and felt that it was highly valuable to the people of Maine. And so we've been conducting the tick ID service for the state since 2014.
When do you want people to send ticks to you? Do you want them to send every tick they find on a dog or on themselves?
I mean, we're happy to take any tick that people want to send in. Like I said, it certainly helps us, you know, get kind of that geographic information about where ticks are being found, what ticks are being found. So we're happy to take any and all ticks that people find. If it's to kind of alleviate their concerns to an extent, they don't have to send every tick that they find in, but we are certainly willing and happy to take any ticks that people do find, whether it be on themselves, their kids, their pets, even just crawling around in the landscape.
And this is so that you can track, though. It's not, you're not going to get back to people and say, oh, this is what kind of tick it was, and this is whether or not it had Lyme disease or another disease, right?
Right. So as of now, we do get back to the client and let them know exactly what type of tick it was. We are in the process of building a new diagnostic and research laboratory here in Orono, where we will offer that service as well, where
wow.
We will hopefully screen for pathogens. It's not meant necessarily for the client as a medical diagnostic tool. It's really more for us to help, you know, continue that passive tracking of both ticks and subsequently their diseases that they carry. So it is a bit of is another piece of information for the client to have, but it's really not meant to be a medical diagnostic tool. It's really more of a research tool.
Sure. And when will that new lab be complete?
So it's currently in the process of being built. We're hoping to move in sometime this summer, and we'll hopefully be able to offer the pathogen screening sometime next year.
All right. So final question for you, Griffin. What can you tell us about this year and what you're seeing? Any patterns, anything important to share?
Yeah. So, I mean, this year it's you know, generally we start to see ticks trickle into the lab somewhere middle of March, and it was no different this year. Actually, our the first deer tick that we received locally was brought to us between in a kind of a 3-day period between two significant nor'easter snowstorms. So we have been seeing them relatively early, and we're, you know, there as it warms up, we're seeing more and more come in. And so far that it's been mostly deer ticks, as Chuck alluded to. We're not seeing a lot of dog ticks as of yet. So it is the deer tick that we're primarily seeing so far this year.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. Griffin Dill with UMaine Cooperative Extension's Tick Identification Lab. And we'll have more information about that on Maine Calling's Facebook page and on Maine Calling's web page. Boy, that sort of seems just nefarious for a tick to bite someone in between two nor'easters.
Well, that was actually kind of how it worked. We had a nice point of weather early March. I think we had like 3 days. It was like 60 degrees down in southern Maine, and they were out like gangbusters for those 3 days. And then, bang, we got hit with another foot of snow that lasted another 2 or 3 weeks. So, yeah, it's kind of a weird spring for that.
We'll go to Clay calling from Presque Isle. Hi, Clay. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Fabulous show today. Yeah, a lot of mystery here. Hey, I get 3 or 4 questions, and then I have a follow-up question after hopefully you guys answer them. I give my dog a pill from the vet. Can't get it anywhere else. Got to get it from the vet. I give him one that's once a month. When I find ticks on him, they don't reach his skin. I just find the skeletal remains of the tick. I was talking to a lady that answered the phones, and she has the same experience. Awesome pill, pricey, well worth it, well worth it. And the thing is there a tick pill for people in the pipeline anywhere? And do ticks have any natural enemies? You know, what is it in the wild that, you know, that eats them or doesn't eat them or whatever? And my last question, the thing about traps, you mentioned about trapping rodents in your yard and stuff. Maybe a game would want to call in on that one, because I'm under the impression, they're talking to game wardens, you're not supposed to be able to trap anything on your land, anything, unless you are licensed to trap.
Okay, Clay, just to be clear, this box that we're talking about, the CDC developed, is not a trap in that it doesn't, the animals walk through it and they get get a pesticide on them. So they're not, you don't keep them. They're just getting a coating of something that's going to kill the ticks, correct?
Yeah, it's like going up to a snack bar for a mouse or a chipmunk. And they get coated with an acaricide that kills the ticks on them as they snack.
An acaricide, is that correct?
Acaricide.
Acaricide,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So, Dr. Smith, we knew the question was coming. It's something everybody wants to know. If my dog can take something to not be infected and get Lyme disease, why can't I? Why isn't there a vaccine? Are we close to one?
That's a very good question, and you may be aware that back in 1998, there was a Lyme disease vaccine that underwent clinical trials and was licensed and appeared to be effective, about 80% effective at preventing Lyme disease. There were some issues. One, you needed to have several different shots, and it wasn't clear how often you'd need to have boosters. However, the biggest problem actually was public acceptance of the vaccine and therefore sales of the vaccine. It really cooled the waters for industry in terms of investing in another Lyme vaccine. It was licensed and appeared in 1998, and I think it was withdrawn in 2001 or 2002 because of poor sales and also public suspicions that maybe the vaccine itself actually caused Lyme disease symptoms. The Data Safety Monitoring Board that looked at that didn't find evidence of it, but nevertheless, there was enough skepticism that it really didn't take off. Now, that was 15 years ago or 16 years ago. I think with the increase in cases and the increase in knowledge around this issue, that times have changed, and they do have vaccines, some that are based on the old vaccine and some newer approaches that are in the offing that would work both in North America and Europe. So they cover the strains in both continents, which would obviously increase the market. And so I think that the time is right to revisit it. It's not really that the science is so far behind here, but it's more an issue of public interest and industry interest.
Nora on Facebook says there is a vaccine for Lyme's. It's available in Canada. Is that right? Is there?
I'm not aware of that.
Okay. And Chuck, the other part of Clay's question, do ticks have enemies?
Mold.
Huh.
How exciting is that for the ticks? Yeah, mold. That's what kills most of the ticks in nature, is actually just mold. There is a wasp, though, that will lay its egg inside of the tick. So the tick, when it engorges its blood, will kind of act like John Hurt in the movie Alien, where it bursts out of the tick. This fly or wasp larva will burst out, but they're probably pretty common, so there's not a whole lot of that controlling ticks.
All right. Well, Clay, thanks for your questions.
And just one thing about the pill that he mentioned for the dogs. That is actually both a flea and tick medicine that's given out once a month. Kind of made to supersede some of the older top spot materials that you would apply to the back of your dog. And so far, I believe it's only available for dogs. Cats do not yet have a chewable form.
All right. Thanks, Clay. Deborah's email says, I'm a wildlife ecologist and owner of First Light Wildlife Habitats. As an ecological consultant, I partner with eco-minded landowners to enhance habitat for birds, pollinators, and other wildlife throughout Maine. I'm very concerned about the trend of homeowners having their property sprayed for ticks and how this practice will affect our native insect populations, which are the foundation for healthy habitats. Can your guests speak to this?
Well, I'm sure Chuck will want to weigh in on this. I'll just mention that there was a large CDC-sponsored study looking at the effectiveness of spraying around the perimeter of yards that was surprisingly disappointing in that in the research world, it looks like you'd get a 90% reduction. But in real life, in these communities where the testing was done, you got a 60% reduction in questing ticks. And they were unable to show a difference in tick bites or tick contacts in the two groups. Now, there were some questions about the study, how the study was done. I'm sure it won't be the last word on this, but it does make the point that there isn't a magic bullet at this point that you can bring to your yard or your environment and feel that this is going to, that this is a proven method of protecting you from Lyme disease. Now, all of these things that kill ticks kill other invertebrates. And we are very concerned when we've done some studies on this, on the effects of pollinators, and actually looked at a couple of organic compounds that worked against ticks. But when we looked at the collateral damage, they also had took the same toll on pollinators. So it's a real challenge, and I think I appreciate the question. It's one of the challenges in trying to find ways to intervene that do not cause collateral damage in other ways.
And the expression you used, questing ticks, what does that mean?
Yeah, so questing ticks are the ones that are likely to attach to you. They don't jump or drop on you or anything like that. They have their legs attached to a blade of grass or a stalk of a plant, and you brush by, and they attach to your clothing or your leg and then go from there.
Yeah, and I think the caller is a good point, because we try to advocate what would be called the integrated pest management approach or an integrated tick management approach, which means you don't use just one thing. And like Rob mentioned, a lot of people like the idea of having a silver bullet that will take care of all your problems with one shot. But really, when you're looking at tick management, the sprays, they do, like it or not, form a component of tick control, but also raking your leaves, removing shrubs around your home, keeping your grass mown, reducing the tick habitat is also something that goes a long way to reducing ticks in the peri-domestic environment around homes, especially in suburban homes. And that can be used as effectively with minimal impact on these other organisms.
We'll go to Ed, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Ed. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. A great topic today. I'm actually a Maine physician, and I was so thrilled to bring my family here in 98, and my son grew up enjoying the fields and the open air. And in November, when I was out hiking, I was bitten by a tick infected with the Lyme disease organism Borrelia burgdorferi. And another friend of mine, a retired rheumatologist here in Maine, he is one of the Yale fellows that actually identified Lyme disease as an issue. He was also bitten and infected. Both of us are convinced that this is a consequence of climate change, and that the spread of ticks and the spread of tick-borne disease in the state is really something that we need to be taking seriously, and would appreciate perspectives on what climate change means in terms of Maine families being able to enjoy the outdoors.
Well, I think that it looks like climate change is a factor in terms of the invasion of deer ticks into the state, which is the source of these problems we've been having. Certainly not the only factor. And as you know, the complexity of teasing out how much is due to change in temperature, how much is due to deer herd populations increasing, to changes in habitat, and to simply the arrival, the growing abundance to the south of us and arrival of more ticks is always a difficult one to figure out. But I'm convinced personally that climate change is a factor, and I think that it's a good wake-up call for us, because when you think of climate change, we think about sea level rise and engineering solutions. In the biology and medical world, we think about other problems that are less easily attributed or less easily tracked, for which we have fairly significant or suggestive evidence that we are going to be dealing with bigger problems down the line if we don't pay attention now.
Ed, thanks so much for your call. An email from Kimberly. If I had been bitten as a kid 20 years ago and was never tested, can I be tested today? And is there treatment if I'm tested positive?
Well, if you're if you had Lyme disease in the past, your blood test may stay positive for years. So that is one of the problems with our current diagnostic testing. We also know that if you had Lyme disease 5 years ago and you get bitten again, even if your test is positive, you can still get Lyme disease again. So a positive blood test, unfortunately, does not mean that you are protected from getting Lyme disease another time.
We'll go to Felix, who's calling from Milo. Hi, Felix. Go ahead.
Hi. Simple. Put down a scenario, and then if I may follow up with some questions.
Okay, we need to go to a break, so be quick. Thanks.
All right. Well, yeah. I go out in the yard. I get a tick on me. I find it. Whatever time window, I pull it off, just rip it off. Then I get a can of Lysol. It says 99.9% kills bacteria and viruses. I spray that on it, rub it in. What's that going to do?
I will let Rob handle that.
Well, I think, first, it's right to get the tick off as soon as you find it. And if you've removed a tick within, let's say, 24 hours of its feeding on you, the likelihood you're going to get any of these diseases is very small. One of them may be transmitted more quickly, but generally you're going to be doing the best you can to protect it. And using some sort of antiseptic is not a bad idea if you've had a puncture in the skin, if you use it correctly and follow the directions.
Okay. And Chuck, well, I've got you, while we're talking about removing ticks, what is the proper way to remove a tick?
Yeah, tweezers. Tweezers, very fine tweezers that will get the entire tick out. Frequently, a lot of people will leave the beak or the what we call the hypostone of the tick under their skin that looks like a splinter because they just rip the tick out. That will cause a secondary possible infection, just like you would have a splinter. But gently tugging a tick patiently will eventually get it out. The Vaseline, covering them with peanut butter, petroleum jelly, that doesn't really work all that well. And so gently tugging a tick.
What about touching it with a hot, just lighted match? No.
That's a bad idea.
Okay. Yeah. Felix, thanks for your call. And we do have to go to a break. But first, a quick word about tomorrow's program. We're going to hear all about surfing in Maine. So if you have questions or comments, you can email those to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Intelligence Squared US, where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues. The next topic up for debate, the more we evolve, the less we need God.
It's not God itself. It's some rational argument.
Author Michael Shermer goes up against Deepak Chopra.
The moon as we know it is a human experience in consciousness.
The debate gets heavy on Intelligence Squared US.
Coming up shortly at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
I'm Tim Franks. From the biggest stories of the day to vital context on issues and trends, BBC NewsHour is there to keep you up to date on the world. Through the largest network of correspondents, we deliver unbiased reporting that complements your local and national news. Join me and my colleagues for NewsHour.
Weekday mornings at 9 o'clock and weekend afternoons at 4 on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what you need to know about ticks and the diseases they carry. Joining me today, Rob Smith, who is an infectious disease specialist, and Chuck Lubelzik, field biologist. Both of them are with the Vector-Borne Disease Lab at Maine Medical Center. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Joining me on the line now is Nick Reckert. Nick is a senior research scientist of ecosystem modeling at the Bigelow Lab for Ocean Sciences. Nick, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer. I love the show.
Thank you. I understand you're studying ticks. Why is an ocean science lab studying ticks, and what exactly are you studying?
Yeah, that's a really good question. One of the things that I study is called ecosystem forecasting. And I started in the ocean, but it works just as well on land. And basically the idea is we check weather forecasts every day. It's part of our daily lives. And my vision is we could also be checking ecosystem forecasts. So we could be looking at daily forecasts of everything from ticks to whales to toxins in drinking water, shellfish, deer in the highway, anything that's sort of biological, we can potentially forecast that. And so I have a daily tick forecast up on my website that I'm running now that I'm hoping people will check out.
All right. And we're going to put a link to that on both the Maine Calling Facebook page and the Maine Calling webpage. But you're also reaching out to all of us in the field, all of us would-be citizen scientists to help you, right?
Yes, exactly. So thank you for that plug. So that the ecosystem is a lot harder to forecast than the weather because you can't just put a tick thermometer outside and have it send you reports of ticks all the time. What we need are people across Maine or across New England to be sending in reports of ticks. So if you go to my website, that's eco.bigelow.org, there's a button on it that says report a tick encounter. And those reports are crucial to getting the forecasts right.
All right. So when did you start this project and has it been long enough to learn anything interesting so far?
Yeah, actually, I started a few years ago with Chuck, starting with the data that he's been collecting from citizen reports going back 10 or 20 years. And that data has been really good for tuning the model. But going forward, one of the things that I've learned is that it really helps the forecast to be getting live information, like as real time and up to date as possible. So that's where these citizen reports are really valuable. And I've also learned a lot about Maine. For one, we have a really strong tradition of citizen science. I started a jellyfish forecast a few years ago, and within a couple of months, I was getting hundreds of reports from people of jellyfish. And so I'm hoping that with ticks, it's similar. Once we get the word out, we'll start getting in a lot of reports from people who are encountering ticks in their yards, at state parks, kind of anywhere that they're seeing them. If they could just go to the website and put that information in, it will really help get the forecast to be accurate, and they can be part of developing this new forecasting technology.
All right, Nick, thanks so much for calling in. That is Nick Record, Senior Research Scientist with the Bigelow Lab for Ocean Sciences. I think I might rather run into a tick than a jellyfish.
So, and just to tie in as kind of an addendum piece with what Nick was talking about, so we've actually been working with him on supplying data for both deer ticks and dog ticks. And so because they are both different and they have in many ways different seasonalities, there may be a benefit to having that kind of split so that people would know when one or the other may be peaking out in the environment.
An email from Ross. I have heard that the possum is a good natural predator of ticks. Is this true, or is the family of three under my shed just waiting for the peas I am planting today?
Opossums apparently like to groom themselves really well. And so I think the theory is that they will lick and eat ticks off of themselves and their litter mates a lot. So I think that's kind of where that goes. But we have an awful lot of possums now in Maine, and we still have an awful lot of ticks. So I don't think they're doing anything as far as contributing to the problem. And they may be keeping, a small amount of ticks in check. But overall, I think there are probably better ways to control ticks than an army of possums.
And we have an email, which is something we have whenever you're on the show, Chuck, which says chickens. You have chickens. Do you count on chickens to control ticks on your property?
No, I don't. I count on them for eggs, but I don't worry about them controlling too many ticks. I think that they may, in fact, control big ticks like dog ticks because they're very visible down south. But deer ticks, especially in the summertime, those nymphs are pretty hard to see. And although chickens, anybody that owns chickens knows, they do a number on the landscape if you let them go and graze. But I think that, it probably doesn't hurt to have them around your house. But whether it makes the situation a little bit better, I'm not really sure.
Okay.
The jury's out on it.
We'll go to Aaron, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Aaron. Go ahead.
Hi there. My mom is always, she's always, like, doused in bug spray and also wears some of the clothing that has, like, I think it's Promethean in it. And always, always, always gets ticks. I'm wondering if there's, like, a body chemistry mixture that almost negates the potency of bug spray. Is that a thing?
Are ticks just more attractive to some people than others?
Not aware of information on that. And certainly mosquitoes, we know, are sometimes attracted to certain people and not to others as much. But I haven't seen scientific studies that have shown that with ticks. Maybe Chuck knows.
Well, with deer ticks tend to hone in on the CO2 that an animal or us are emitting. So, and I think with even mosquitoes, they found that people that, for instance, exude a lot of lactic acid make them more attractive. The mosquitoes can hone in a little better. As your off-gassing, lactic acid, or CO2, you become a little bit more attractant. So it could be that you have people that maybe are giving off a lot more CO2. You know, they may be a little bit more attractant to the ticks and could provide a better host.
But you think that if somebody's using permethrin-treated clothing and then maybe a effective repellent on exposed skin, that really that should prevent a number of the ticks from wanting to attach. So that's, I'm not quite sure what's going on in that case.
All right, Aaron, thanks for your call. We're going to go up to Nate in Owl's Head. Hi, Nate, go ahead.
Hi. So I had read that there's a direct correlation between the number of deer in a deer population and the transmission of Lyme disease. So more deer, more transmission of Lyme, less transmission. So if that's true, and I'm kind of asking you to confirm that, why aren't we pursuing more aggressive population control of deer as a matter of public policy?
So it's actually more that the number of deer is correlated to a higher number of ticks, because deer are kind of the default host for adult ticks to feed on. And the adult ticks get a blood meal from the deer and then lay their eggs. So one deer in the fall could potentially have 100 ticks. Those 100 ticks could produce anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 young ticks after they lay their eggs. So the number of ticks is sort of correlated to the number of deer in an area. And so I think that the state actually is incorporating the issues of tick-borne disease in deer management plans statewide. Certain areas of the state where you have Lyme disease as a problem, for instance, the actual goal is to have a lower deer herd than what you would have in areas where tick-borne disease is not as much of an issue. So there is some statewide effort to address this question.
Nate, thanks for your call. I want to go to an email here from Amanda. Any update on the progress of the Lyme PrEP, P-R, small e, capital P, being tested by UMass Med School in Boston? Have clinical human trials started yet? They were due to start this spring. With a 100% efficacy in mice trials, it seems promising. Dr. Smith, is this something you know about?
I actually don't know about their studies. It sounds interesting. I assume they're using a doxycycline preparation, perhaps, to take orally through the season, because there was a study done by the CDC looking at the provision of doxycycline to mice through various baits and so on that looked as though it was 100% protective in terms of preventing the agent of Lyme disease from getting established or persisting in those mice. I'm not aware of any human trials. There have been some trials using topical antibiotics at the site of tick bites that haven't really panned out, but I'd be interested in hearing more about their study.
Another email, this one from Sean. My clinic is participating in a national clinical trial for a new test that may detect early Lyme infections. Do you know anyone with a deer tick bite with or without a bullseye rash? Integrative Health Center of Maine is seeking volunteers 5 years or older for a study to develop a new lab test for early detection of Lyme disease. Volunteers will be compensated for their participation. So we'll put information about that on our Facebook page and on our webpage as well. We'll go to Tammy, who's calling from Charleston. Hi, Tammy. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
My question is, are you doing research or would you be interested in doing research along with allopathic medicine as to alternative therapies, either used by themselves or with the allopathic medicine? And the reason I'm asking is because I was diagnosed with Lyme last year, put on, I think it was probably doxycycline. And of course, it doesn't work right away. It takes time. But for 3 days, the symptoms continued to progress, and I finally sent my husband out for some homeopathic Lidum. And within 15 minutes, I was better. I know it sounds crazy, but homeopathy works that way sometimes. And the next day, my lymph nodes were down, like I couldn't even feel them. The redness was disappearing. So, again, it could have been coincidence, but I honestly believe that there might be something there if people are willing to do research on it, at least for some people.
Okay. What do we know about homeopathic treatments?
Well, I think one of the problems is there is very little research on anything other than antimicrobial treatments for Lyme disease, and certainly an area that there's some interest in. We are not involved in any research in that area. We really don't have the resources to do that. We are involved in another early Lyme disease detection test and in some clinical studies of patients with other tick-borne diseases just to understand better the clinical spectrum. And those are the clinical areas we're working on right now.
All right, Tammy, thanks for your call. An email from Donna. I was outside for 45 minutes last June, and when I came inside to wash my hands, I found a nymph on my forearm already embedded. So you may say that they're sesame seed size when adult, but this was the size of a poppy seed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. In the summertime, the deer ticks are quite small, and they do say that it's about the size of a poppy seed from, if you find a tick on you, really tiny, from late May through the first half of August, and they are about the size of a poppy seed, then that is going to be a deer tick nymph. And they are quite tiny, very hard to detect and see. So we tell people to really know your freckles, know your moles.
Wow, and those can carry Lyme disease.
They do, yep.
Oh, boy. We'll go to Larry calling from Surrey. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I use 91% isopropyl alcohol and put on a tick that was on me and held it over the tick, the whole bottle, for 5 minutes, and the tick came right off with absolutely no effort whatsoever, no bullseye rash, and it was just amazing.
All right. Have you tried that, Chuck?
No, not yet. there was actually somebody that promoted the idea of swabbing the ticks with some kind of compound that might be an irritant. And the worry there is that as the ticks may get upset, they may actually regurgitate more into you as they're trying to get out and away from your skin. So there is, I think, a general belief that you probably shouldn't apply anything that's going to irritate the tick because you don't want it regurgitating faster into you as it's trying to get out from underneath your skin.
So, Larry, thanks for your call. So you recommend tweezers first, and then after tweezers, is it helpful to put on a simple antibiotic gel or something like that?
We don't usually recommend anything beyond removing the tick at this point. That's the key intervention.
Yeah. And I think when one of the things that people do, unfortunately, is that they do quite a bit of damage to their skin pulling the ticks out. So if you do end up creating a divot, essentially, by digging the tick out of you, then certainly I would apply an antiseptic to that because you do have an open wound, essentially, and then bandage it clean.
All right. Well, that's going to be our last word for this hour. I apologize to anyone left hanging. We're out of time. Thank you, as always, Dr. Rob Smith, director and co-founder of Maine Medical Center's Vector-Borne Disease Laboratory. He's also director of the Division of Infectious Disease. He is part of the Federal Health and Human Services Tick-Borne Disease Working Group. And Chuck Lubelzik is also with the Vector-Borne Disease Lab. He is a field biologist. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as links to all sorts of information offered on today's program at mainecalling.org. Tomorrow on the program, Surfing in Maine, I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.